Cavalcade of Kings. Queen Victoria, Part 2. Victoria was crowned Queen of Great Britain and Ireland at Westminster on the 28th of June, 1838. She found on her accession Viscount Melbourne at the head of the Whig government. He became her constant companion and chief adviser. He was her prime minister and her private secretary, and he shared with Madame Leysin, now Baroness Leysin, the Queen's most private confidences. The belief that she was Queen of England by God's will enabled Victoria to walk alone into her first council meeting without the slightest nervousness, though her two uncles, the Dukes of Cumberland and Sussex, who had terrified her as a child, preceded her. But overshadowing her was the malignant influence of Baroness Leysin, a woman whom the Queen's mother, the Duchess of Kent, loathed and detested, as did the Queen's ladies. Sometime after her accession, we find Victoria and Baroness Leysin in conversation at the palace.
Dear Leysin, I am a very fortunate queen in having such an admirable man as my Lord Melbourne at the head of my government. He is indeed a truly honest, straightforward man, with a noble mind, a man in whom I can safely place confidence. There are not many like him in this world of deceit. He is my friend, and I know it. Moreover, he is your friend, my dear Leysin, which makes me more fond of him still.
I am very grateful to my lord for his friendship towards me. I fear I have no other friend.
You have many friends.
In Germany, yes, madame, but in England, no. I am hated here. Hated because your majesty favors me with her confidence.
Nonsense, Leysin. Nobody hates you.
You do not see, madame, but I see. Nor hear, but I hear. The ladies of your household jeer at me. They mock me and treat me abominably when your majesty is not present. Lady Flora Hastings laughs derisively at my fondness for caraway seeds and openly insults me. But soon my turn will come, and I shall see this proud beauty humbled to the dust, her name a byword, her reputation trampled in the slime of the gutter.
These are strong words, Baroness. And if I did not know you so well, I should be inclined to think you guilty of being vindictive and malicious. As it is, there must be good reason for the fierceness of your remarks. Pray tell me what actuates you to utter them.
Madame, the subject is too scandalous to discuss with such a young and innocent person as your majesty.
Surely my Lady Flora Hastings has not been guilty of such conduct as cannot be mentioned before me.
Madame, I must tell you, it is my duty to do so in order to preserve the purity which surrounds your court. My Lady Hastings has been guilty of breaking the rule which every decent woman holds dear and sacred. To be brutally frank, madame, it is rumored that the woman has given herself to an unknown lover without the benefit of the clergy.
Leysin, that is a dreadful accusation to make. Unless you have proof.
I have proof, madame. I beg you to rid yourself of the woman before this scandal, which is hovering over the court, descends upon us.
The scandal was unfounded, being but the malicious uttering of a vindictive woman. The Queen tearfully, but privately, apologized to Lady Hastings, but did not even reproach Baroness Leysin, a fact which caused the people to lose their affection for the Queen. And when, some 4 months later, the unfortunate Lady Hastings died, the indignation increased a hundredfold, and so great was the public anger felt against the Queen that she was hissed when she appeared in the royal enclosure at Ascot. We now find Her Majesty in conversation with Lord Melbourne.
But my dear Melbourne, I don't want to marry yet for years and years.
Madam, it is your duty to marry, and very soon.
There's nothing romantic in marrying for duty's sake. Oh, Melbourne, I'll do anything, make any sacrifice for my country. But I implore you not to force me into a loveless marriage with the Prince of... No. I can't bring myself to mention his name. I loathe him. He is so different to dear Albert. Dear friend, my childhood and girlhood have been totally devoid of affection. Always it has been duty, 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 and stern discipline. And to go on through the years without knowing the tenderness and romance which only love can bring would be a condition which I don't think I could bear.
I thought our gracious lady had found romance at the recent state ball, when the handsome young Grand Duke of Russia was her honored guest.
Alexander. Ah, oh, Melbourne. He is a dear, delightful young man. And I enjoyed dancing a mazurka with him. He is so strong. And in running round in the dance, I had to follow very quickly to keep up with him. After that, he whisked me round and round till my head grew dizzy in that rather shocking new dance, the valse, which I must confess was very pleasant.
I thought your Majesty appeared quite interested in his Highness' conversation, too.
Ah, Melbourne, dear Alexander can say the most shocking things in the most unshocking manner.
Unshocking, lady?
Well, you know what I mean, Melbourne. He was bold, but not blatant. Gallant, but not distant. In fact, he was a most refreshing young man. I thoroughly enjoyed his spicy wit, even though I did not quite comprehend it all the time.
Your Majesty has an affection for his Highness?
I could love him, as a brother.
I had hoped otherwise. Gracious lady, do you realize that the throne of England must pass into the hands of your uncle, the Duke of Cumberland, whom, forgive me for saying so, the people call the Hanoverian ogre because of his appearance, and who refers to your Majesty as a brother's brat who stands between me and the throne? There are several sinister incidents in his life which have never been cleaned up. I refer to the murder of his valet, Sellis, and the suicide, it was called, of Lord Graves.
Oh, please, don't you horrify me.
Your Majesty, I am forced to tell you this. I am deeply sorry if I have wounded your susceptibilities, but we must protect the Queen of England against, well, to be blunt, assassination.
Melbourne, you... No, you can't mean that my uncle...
He is capable of doing anything to gain his own ends. Oh, madam, you must never allow him to mount the throne.
He never shall, my lord. You have shown me clearly where my duty lies. I shall marry as soon as possible to give England an heir. But I must be allowed to choose my own husband, Melbourne. I do insist upon that.
Providing he is of royal birth, no objections will be raised, madam.
He is of royal birth, Melbourne.
His name?
My cousin, Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg.
Do you love him, gracious lady?
With all my heart and soul, dear friend. Albert, I do not think it possible for anyone in the world to be happier than I. You were an angel.
An angel? Oh, mein lieber Frau. But no, I am just a man. A simple man who means to make himself indispensable to his beloved wife. Not only as her husband, but as her sole counselor. To put his will, his perceptions, and his poor ability entirely into her service.
Oh, you are very good to me, Albert. And I love you so. You have given up father, brother, country for me. God grant I may make you happy and contented, dearest and best of all men.
It is in your power, my lip, to make of me the happiest of men.
Tell me how, my beloved, and I'll do it.
Give me your confidences in big things as well as small. Let me advise you when you need advice, for I have no politics to sway me nor to prejudice me. I am prepared to give to England of my best, my loyalty, my love, and a life of faithful service. I do not seek to be her king, my little Victoria, only her humble servant. But I must have the confidence of my wife, the Queen.
God bless you, my darling. I shall gladly come to you when I am perplexed with the problems which beset my path. I shall do more. You shall be present at all my future interviews with the ministers. You shall indeed be master of your house, not merely the husband of its mistress. Although it would seem that I am scarcely mistress of it myself.
Victoria, there is something else I wish to discuss with you. I refer to the Baroness Leysin.
Leysin has always been my comfort and companion, ever since the days of my unhappy childhood, Albert.
But everything has changed since then, Victoria, and unfortunately, Leysin does not realize the difference your marriage has made to her own position. She is stupidly jealous of me and endeavors to cling to a control she should have relinquished when you ascended the throne. She interferes in matters of state or attempts to. And frankly speaking, her management of your household is clumsy, extravagant, and uncomfortable.
I do not want to part with her, Albert. Please, don't ask me to do that.
But, my dear, she is a menace. Her vindictive slander of an innocent woman has had very disastrous reactions upon yourself and your ministers.
I'll think it over, Albert, and see what can be done. And now let us go to the music room. I want you to hear a new song I've learned, especially for you.
Prince Albert's death in 1861 was a very bitter blow to Victoria, and for years she mourned him. He had endeared himself to the English people and helped to place on a firm foundation the very shaky edifice of the English throne. Weakened and robbed of its dignity by the Hanoverian brothers, during the reign of Victoria, the names of such patriotic giants as Peel, Palmerston, Russell, Disraeli, Salisbury and Gladstone shone like stars in the political firmament. And the names of Chinese Gordon, Lord Roberts, Lord Kitchener, and one of the noblest of all, Florence Nightingale, glorified the fields of battle. It is now the new year of 1901. Victoria, a very tired, frail old lady, has driven down the convalescent home to visit the soldiers who have returned from South Africa. She saw Lord Roberts and invested him with the Order of the Garter. After the ceremony, we find them chatting together.
The whole nation is with me to see this war through without intervention. And my country, which is suffering from so heavy a sacrifice of precious lives, will resist all interference.
You are right, madam. The settlement with the Boers after the defeat in December would have forced us to surrender all we have fought and fled for.
Oh, my lord, I shall never forget how you defeated General Cronje at Paardeberg, nor how you relieved Ladysmith after its long siege.
Soon, madam, peace and prosperity will return to South Africa, and the angelic message of goodwill towards all men, which Christmas was lost in the shrieks of red-eyed shells and dying men, will be heard ringing loud and clear like a paean to glory.
Honorable peace for England is what I pray for every day, my dear Robert. And now, please escort me to my camp. A very dreadful year. And I am very tired. And old.
Will you accept my arm, madam?
Gladly and proudly, my lord. For that arm has nobly borne an honorable sword for queen and country. We are both very grateful.
I am proud to have been of service to such a queen and such a country, madam.